Gateway Market and Cafe is Des Moines' locally owned grocery and specialty food store, centrally located at ML King Parkway and Woodland Ave. Enjoy chef-crafted prepared foods, artisan baked goods, organic produce, hand-cut meats, local and international cheeses, wines, and craft beer. Gateway's Cafe is open for dine-in, carry-out, and delivery service 7 days a week. Stop by or visit gatewaymarket.com for more details. Gateway Market, good food, great community. Welcome to the Fallon Forum, folks. Hey, thanks to our sponsors, including Gateway Marketing Cafe. Gateway is Central Iowa's premier good food store and brings together the world's finest products with Iowa-grown foods and passionate personalized service. If you're looking for quality foods with a community focus, check out Gateway Marketing Cafe. Thanks also to Central Iowa realtor Joe Henry. Residential, commercial, land, Joe's been covering all that for 23 years. He's also a leading community activist and a strong advocate for locally owned businesses. Call Joe Henry at 515-208-7312. All right, hey, as always, thanks to the Des Moines Iowa Session for our bumper music. A lot of ground to cover with you today, folks. A word on the climate crisis. I know you think it's a hoax, right? No, most people don't. Good. Very few people do, in fact. And according to Jeff Goodell, I can't remember what his role is. He's an expert in something or other. He says heat is now one of the greatest class dividers in America. He calls this the cooled and the cooked. That's cute. The two parties that Americans split into during blazing summers. You know, the cooled folks are those who can afford the best air conditioning and get to spend their days in that. And the cooked are those who must work outside. I mean, even if you have air conditioning, if you are working outside, you know, a farm worker, a field worker, there's a chance you're going to be in a truck without air conditioning. Or if you're a migrant worker laboring in a farm field, there's pretty much no federal protections that are going to require them to give you breaks or to provide certain levels of, you know, certain types of cooling options. Now, even the immigrant workers who are here on an H-2A guest worker program, which, again, a lot of big farms love that program because it brings them the laborers they need. Even if you're on one of those visas, are here legally, you know, and you're tied to a specific farmer, a specific employer, if you complain about conditions, you risk being sent home. One more piece of data from this story that I got through Jeff Goodell. Farm workers are up to 35 more times likely to die from heat-related causes than workers in other industries. So, and Goodell concludes, it's symptomatic of the larger injustice of the climate crisis, which is that the people who have done the least to cause it are the ones who will suffer the most from its impacts. All right, thought I'd get that out there. We're going to move from that to one of my favorite billionaires, Mark Zuckerberg. Every time I use Facebook, I cringe and think, yeah, somehow Zuckerberg is making money off me. So he's got so much money, it's insane. It's crazy. It's crazy how much money him and a handful of other billionaires have. It's just insane. And he is buying up all kinds of property in several states. The one that really caught my attention this week was for the past 14 or 15 years now, he's been buying a property in Palo Alto, California, and a lot of property, 11 properties in what's called the Crescent Park neighborhood. And the other rich people who live in that neighborhood, the lesser rich, shall we call them, the deprived rich, they are pretty unhappy with what's going on. They say, you know, now they live next to this compound, basically, that's been ultra secured. I didn't quite get a vision of what the security looks like, but it's pretty bad. It's pretty crazy. And because he's always working on stuff, I'm not quite sure what's going on, but always construction noise. You know, one thing that is known is there is a 7,000 square foot basement in there. Again, I don't know what you do with a 7,000 square foot basement, possibly the biggest man cave ever built. There's also a private school, and that was built for his two daughters. And about a dozen other children also attend this private school. But because it was operating in violation of a city code, the city code caused it to be closed down. So I guess even billionaires have to abide by the law once in a while. So, despite all the pushback from the planning department in Palo Alto and pushback from the neighbors, he's been incrementally able to, assemble these homes over the past 14 years with this massive estate. Again, it's just him and his wife and three kids who live there. And, I guess I would say some are calling it a compound, but I wouldn't call it a compound unless you've got a whole bunch of people living there, disciples or groupies or servants, and then you have to start serving the Kool-Aid. That's when it becomes a real compound. Okay, so he's also, again, bought about 1,400 acres in Hawaii, two compounds. So I don't know what's wrong with these people. I mean, I'd like to tell you that I feel sorry for the ultra-rich. I mean, their lives must be so empty to have to fill it with all this stuff and to do so in a way that antagonizes the people around you. I mean, do you really want to be at war with all your neighbors? Do you really want to just come in and buy up all this property, at above market rates, because otherwise somebody else probably would have bought those properties? No, I guess you want to do that. Yeah, I really, what is wrong with these people? I mean, what is wrong with people who feel that they need billions and billions of dollars and they need a compound? I'm sorry, folks. Excessive wealth is a disease. And it's badly afflicting our country right now, because even more severely impacted than the rich themselves by the disease of excessive wealth are those who are deprived of inadequate living. As we mentioned earlier, how the climate crisis is affecting those who must work hard outside for a living, on roofs and farm fields, you name it. So another disease I'm concerned about is fascism. Maybe that's a stretch there, but call it out, folks. Fascism has arrived in America. This is bad news. The good news, though, is that it has not yet taken firm roots here. It's still got a ways to go to fully establish itself. We are still able to dislodge it, but it is here. And it is not entirely the fault of Donald Trump, but he is certainly the person leading the charge at establishing an authoritarian state. So there's a Time magazine article from June, and it discusses a group of scholars from more than 30 countries, and that includes 28 Nobel laureates. They signed a letter warning about the extent to which we have devolved into authoritarianism. And actually, they weren't critical of just the U.S., but all around the world. The world is seeing this problem. Yeah, and there are places where it's more well-established, certainly harder to unroot, in places like China and Russia. And there's something called the VDEM Institute, and they've got something called a 2025 Democracy Report. And that report estimated that 72% of the world's population now live under autocratic rule. And of course, that includes, as I said, China and Russia. It also includes Israel. The report says that Israel has recently seized humanitarian flotillas in international waters. Palestinians in Gaza are being bombed, displaced, and starved. We know that. We've talked about that. Hungary, of course, freedom of the press, civil rights have been fundamentally denied for years. In India, religious minorities are now, seeing greater levels of violence than they have under, a clampdown from Prime Minister Narendra Modi. We know about El Salvador and President Nayib Bukele, who called himself a great, a wonderful dictator. And of course, Turkey, there are, it's a problem all over the world. And in this country, you know, we still have a good chance of not going that far, of not letting it take hold here to the point where we're going to be like China or Russia or Hungary or Iran even. You know, I mean, we can stop this. We can stop this. These scholars wrote, quote, "We must not sleepwalk toward the collapse of democracy." Now, again, letter drafted by 30 scholars. Over 400 have signed the letter. And they come from a variety of perspectives and backgrounds, but they agree on one thing. They're united in their commitment to maintaining our democracy. They want to see the rule of law. They want to see the independence of the judicial branch of government. And they want to see autonomy for scientific and cultural institutions. And we see Trump, you know, already denying science left and right. And of course, also trying to take over culture. So, yeah, they value the dignity of every human being. They value democracy. They value freedom and justice. And here's a quote from their report. "We must convince people of conscience that masked agents abducting civilians without due process, the neutering of legislatures, the dismissal of international human rights law, and the erosion of judicial independence cannot be accepted. History teaches us that tyrants typically consolidate their power by mocking intellectuals. Then they escalate through violence," end quote. I like that they put mocking intellectuals in there because obviously these are the first types of intellectuals that, you know, that an authoritarian would love to, you know, malign, dismiss, arrest. So, you know, when hundreds of scholars, 400 in this case, people who've dedicated their lives to studying the fall of democracies warn that fascism is returning, they're not being dramatic, they're being precise, as this story concluded by saying. I think that's spot on. All right, so here in Des Moines, we made international news a couple weeks ago when a group of about six people put up a sign across the interstate, "Trump equals Hitler." And somebody got so mad, a driver, a guy named Bradley Nall, he got so mad that he stopped his pickup truck on the bridge, came over and tore all the signs down, yelling, "What are you going to do? What are you going to do? Who's going to stop me? Who's going to stop me?" And he was swearing a bit. The protesters were swearing back. I would play you a clip from that scene, but I would basically be bleeping the whole thing. So, yeah, he even hit one of the protesters as she was trying to block the sign to protect it from being taken down by him. So, yeah, it's a pretty awful exchange. It's a video that has received, as of last week, over 500,000 views. I wouldn't be surprised if it's over a million by now. So I'm not excited that the protesters were, you know, swearing back at him, but I am glad that they called the police. He was charged with assault and fifth-degree criminal mischief. There was a detective assigned to the case, and the detective reported that the man wanted to he requested a meeting with the protesters because he wanted to apologize. Well, good for him, right? I'm glad to see that. So the person leading one of the leading protesters said, quote, "He wanted a face-to-face interaction to apologize in exchange for dropping the charges, but I'm just not interested." Now, I'm not sure whether it was in exchange for dropping the charges, but at any rate, you know, apologizing face-to-face, that's a good thing. You know, I mean, why not encourage that? Maybe something will come out of that. I don't know. So this guy actually started a GoFundMe page to pay for his legal expenses. I'm not sure what. I love the words. "Support for patriots standing up for Trump." And he calls himself just a regular working guy, which he very well might be. But again, I don't get why not meet with him? Why not meet with him? You know, why stoop to his level and call him, you know, just swear at him left and right? You know, I think we're not going to win the battle against authoritarianism with violence, whether it be verbal or physical or otherwise. It's going to take lessons from Mahatma Gandhi, Martin Luther King, all the other great nonviolent leaders of our in our history who have showed that you can actually accomplish a lot more through nonviolent action than you can with violence. I got to take a short break, folks. Back in a minute, I'm going to tell you about an exclusive development in Arkansas that, you got to be white and heterosexual if you want to go there. I'll tell you about this in a minute on the Fallon Forum.
Thanks to Central Iowa realtor Joe Henry. Residential, commercial, land, Joe Henry's been covering all that for 23 years. He's also a leading community activist and a strong advocate for locally owned businesses. Call Joe Henry at 515-208-7312. That's 515-208-7312. You're responsible for a lot, and it's easy to become overwhelmed, to feel helpless, even hopeless. What's not so easy is finding your way back to feeling and functioning better. Psychiatrist Dr. David Drake helps individuals and couples throughout Iowa with the convenience and privacy of televideo counseling. Dr. Drake also prescribes medication when needed, and his services are offered on a self-pay, negotiated fee basis. If you need help, don't delay. Contact Dr. Drake at daviddrakefamilypsychiatry.com.
Hey, welcome back to the Fallon Forum. Thanks to our sponsors and partners, including Catholic Peace Ministry, whose focus is on nuclear disarmament, the war between Israel and Hamas, the war in Ukraine, and the need to end the permanent war economy. Learn more at CatholicPeaceMinistry.com. Thanks also to Westrom Optometry. Dr. Joel Westrom and his staff are fluent in English and Spanish. The clinic is open Monday through Friday from 9 a.m. until 5 p.m. and on Saturdays by appointment. That's Westrom Optometry. All right, so we have a very active Republican primary for governor shaping up here in Iowa. It's got a lot of interesting candidates, and the most recent one is a guy named Adam Steen. He's a very prominent position in the Reynolds administration. He was the head of the Department of Administrative Services. And he just announced he's going to run for governor. And his angle is he is, quote, the faith guy. he launched his campaign at a church saying, quote, I am the faith guy. I'm a Jesus guy. I'm a make America great again guy. I'm the guy that's excited to work alongside President Trump to build our country and usher in a golden age of prosperity. So I'm thinking, well, I don't know. Was Jesus all about prosperity? I mean, he didn't have any possessions. He fed the poor. He preached to the hungry and the needy and helped widows, you know, and orphans. I mean, I don't know. There wasn't a lot of prosperity there unless I missed it. Unless he was packing the whole, you know, chest full of gold from the. From when the Magi visited him when he was a baby. Maybe he had that treasure chest of gold, frankincense, and myrrh buried somewhere. I don't know. Anyway, I get a kick out of these people who like to put Jesus on their forehead and say, yeah, I'm the Jesus guy. And then they talk about wealth and power. I mean, that's not the Jesus of the Bible that I am familiar with. Anyway, so the political landscape here, there's a lot going on with our Republican primary. There's a bit going on with the Democratic primary, not as much, because it looks like Rob Sand is pretty much the guy who's going to win the Democratic nomination. He does have an opponent. We'll see where that goes, but she's very not well-known, and he is, of course, very well-known. We'll see what happens with that. Looking beyond Iowa, I'm looking at this redistricting war. It's very fascinating to me because I knew Republicans, you know, specifically D.C. Republicans and Trump, would find a way to try to make sure they don't lose the House in the 2026 election. I didn't necessarily see them attempting to do something as brash as an entirely new census. And we see that happened in Texas. Texas now has 5 seats that are more likely to go Republican. California is trying to offset that, and they have passed a map that would do that. It needs to be approved by the voters. It's not clear whether the voters will go along with that. Illinois might have another seat they can grab from Republicans, although I think there's, only 3 Republicans in Congress in from Illinois. But, you know, if you look at the redistricting scenario across the country, Republicans are absolutely going to win that. You know, if it goes all the way, even if California gets its 5 new Democratic seats, that's going to be won by Republicans. So some are saying, well, it's already lost. No, it's not. If Democrats should still think about where they might be able to pick up seats. So 2 of them happen to be here in Iowa. I mean, there are 2, maybe 3 congressional districts that are in play. And one reason is Iowa has a very fair system of creating legislative and congressional boundaries. It's done by a nonpartisan agency. It has to be voted up or down by the legislature. They can't change it. They can't tweak it. They can't gerrymander it. If they do reject it, the Legislative Services Agency comes back with Plan B. And if legislators again reject that, then it goes to the Iowa Supreme Court, which is fairly nonpartisan. Although it is a nonpartisan entity. Although the governor has tried to make it more partisan in recent years. But still, we have a good system. If you look at Iowa's congressional map, it's 4 blocks. It's not these crazy shapes. It's not the salamander district that originally led to the name gerrymander. I talked about that last week. You know, so there are three of the 4 seats in Iowa used to be Democratic. Not that long ago. So there are 2, maybe 3 seats here that I would say are fairly competitive. And there are seats in other parts of the country that are also competitive. If you look at maps that have been put out about the likely breakout of congressional races, it's too close to call. I mean, it could go any direction at all. But there's a very good chance that even with the redistricting mischief being caused by the Republicans in Texas and elsewhere, there's a whole bunch of seats that are up for grabs. And given the fact that the party in the White House usually does really bad in midterm elections, as happened in 2018, given that a lot of Trump's policies are starting to impact people who supported him, who are starting to say, that's not what I voted for. I mean, look at the big farmers who are losing their workforce. Look at those industries that are being affected by tariffs. There are lots of ways in which people who might have supported Trump are starting to have second thoughts. And all of that's going to come together to make for an interesting midterm election that I think, despite the redistricting efforts of the Trump administration, I think there's still a really excellent chance that the House is going to, you know, switch to the Democratic Party. Again, I don't know whether the Democrats will do anything good with that, but it might at least put a check and balance in place to assure that there isn't just one-party government going on, as we pretty much have right now. So we'll see what happens with that. Yeah. So if you look at the maps, there are plenty of ways in which Democrats can regain the House. And again, given everything I've been saying, you know, it's a likely outcome, despite the redistricting mischief going on. The Senate, of course, is still a longer shot, although I think one of the seats that is up in the air is the Senate seat here in Iowa. So I don't know how this is all going to play out. Nobody does, of course. Even crystal ball, it's not sure how all this is going to play out. But one thing is for sure is that Trump will continue to try any tactic he can to prevent this from being a fair election. Again, this is a typical strategy of authoritarians. and actually even of other politics, other politicians as well, you accuse the other side of what you're doing. I mean, we know that Trump tried to steal the 2020 election. You know, and now that's exactly what he's trying to steal, the 2026 election. And Republicans and other, he tried to steal the 2020 election. Remember what he told the Secretary of State in Georgia, you know, or the governor of Georgia? Find me some votes. Find me a number of thousands of votes. So, you know, I'm not saying Democrats are above political mischief, electoral mischief, but this administration is taking it to a new level. And, you know, they may succeed in retaining the Senate. They have a longer shot at retaining the House despite the efforts they're undertaking right now. We shall see what happens. Anyway, I came across this new housing development in the Ozark Mountains. Two guys, Eric Orwell and Peter Serre. I'm not sure if I'm saying their names right, but I think I'm pretty close. They're building an exclusive community on 160 acres of beautiful land in the Ozark Mountains. And it's open to people. They want people to move there under certain conditions. One, you got to be white. Two, you got to be heterosexual. And currently they have about 40 people living there. And they're pushing the anti-discrimination housing laws to the limit. We'll see what happens. So if you want to apply to be in the community, you've got to be screened. There's an in-person interview. There's also a criminal background check. All right, whatever. And then there's a questionnaire about your ancestral heritage. And sometimes they even demand photographs of your relatives to make sure the skin tone is correct. So interestingly, these two guys, Eric and Peter, they are musicians. One is a classically trained French horn player, and the other is a former jazz pianist. Renika Moore, she's the director of the Racial Justice Program at the ACLU. She says, quote, "Federal and state law, including the Fair Housing Act, prohibit housing discrimination based on race, period. Repackaging residential segregation as a private club is still a textbook violation of federal law." So, yeah, I it's horrible what they're doing, but if I was black or gay or not, I presume to kind of got a Christian angle here, I don't know, but if I was black or gay, why would I want to live there? Why would I want to live there? I mean, I don't want to be surrounded by those people. But again, that doesn't mean they should get away with it. They shouldn't be doing this, you know? It's so how did they get to be this weird? Well, Orwell, he had an online presence for a while, and it attracted a lot of comments from the radical fringe. And some of those were spouting the great replacement theory, you know, that black and brown people are going to take over and push all the white people out. And so he was attracted to those comments. And some of those comments were also about stating that human intelligence was tied to genetics. And so, you know, so Orwell began to be convinced by these comments that white people in America were indeed being persecuted and that white people had superior genetics. Somehow he got to be convinced. He should have stuck with the French horn, in my opinion. Anyway, the other guy, Peter Cesare, I'm not trying to say his name, but C-S-E-R-E. He's got an interesting history as well, maybe even more interesting. He was searching for meaning, not being satisfied as a jazz pianist. So he became a vegan, and he started an eco-village in Ecuador. It was called Fruit Haven. And the other people living there, I don't know the background, but they at some point ended up accusing him of theft and fraud, saying he stole thousands of dollars. They also accused him of stabbing someone. And so he was arrested. And I don't know the details of all that, but he fled. So he's got a very interesting past as well. One more thing about this Orwell guy. He and his ex-wife, Caitlin Smith, who apparently still lives at the compound, different kind of compound than Zuckerberg's. He and his ex-wife met at music school, and before they had four children, you know what they did for work? They made live sex videos on a porn site. That's how they made their money. Okay. All right. No judgment. But even though they're now divorced, they and their four children live at the community. And Caitlin Smith says it's been great for the kids because it has given them, quote, people to play with that we could trust. Okay, so that's interesting. What does that mean, people we can trust? Well, let's dig into that a little bit, shall we? She goes on to say, quote, this is how I've always wanted to live, returning to the land. The most important thing about this project for me is being able to actually vet my neighbors. You can move to a nice area, and in 10 years, you have no idea who's going to be living down the street. What makes a person is their whole past, who they are now, and the genetics as well. Yes, she added that at the end of this paragraph that you kind of knew it was going that direction, right? And the genetics. We just don't want to be living across the street from people with different genetics. Oh, gosh. I don't know where this is going. I don't know what this community is going to be looking like in next year, 2 years, 5 years. But I predict that we will hear more about this place, possibly in an incident involving the consumption of Kool-Aid laced with who knows something. I don't know. Or maybe they'll all hop on a spaceship and try to find their way to Mars and meet up with Jeff Bezos. Anyway, I got to take a short break. We're going to talk about Irish rappers when we come back from a short break on the Fallon Forum.
Catholic Peace Ministry is an independent nonprofit guided by an ecumenical board representing many faith traditions. Founded in 1980, Catholic Peace Ministry focuses on nuclear disarmament and ending the wars between Israel and Hamas and Russia and Ukraine. CPM's overarching concern is the need to end the permanent war economy, which must be challenged if we are to achieve lasting peace and justice. Learn more at CatholicPeaceMinistry.com.
At Westrom Optometry, Dr. Joel Westrom and his team provide a variety of services, including comprehensive eye exams, children's eye exams, and LASIK co-management. Whether strictly utilitarian or a fashion statement, your comfort and vision are Westrom's primary concern. Dr. Westrom and his staff will work closely with you to determine the best solution for your eyes, prescription, and lifestyle. Services are provided in English and Spanish, and the clinic is open Monday through Friday from 9 a.m. till 5 p.m. and on Saturdays by appointment. That's Westrom Optometry, located in Des Moines East Village. All right, Ed Fallon with you here, welcoming you back to the Fallon Forum. And thanks to our sponsors, including Story County Veterinary Clinic, where Dr. Kim Holding has been caring for all creatures, great and small, for over 30 years. Learn more at Story County Veterinary Clinic's Facebook page. Thanks also to Architecture by Synthesis. Owner Mark Clipsham asks that you use the most energy-efficient methods you can afford and the greenest, longest-lasting materials available. Examples of Mark's work can be found at architecturebysynthesis.com. All right, so I play a lot of Irish music, but I don't play a lot of Irish rap music. But a very increasingly high-profile Irish rap group called Kneecap. At a concert last year, there's three members of the band. One of them grew up speaking Irish. The other two learned it in school, and they are all fluent in the Irish language. And they use Irish extensively in their music. They do some English as well, but they don't hesitate to include a lot of the native language. So last year at a concert in the U.S., I believe, Kneecap led the crowd in a chant of Free Palestine, and they ended with pro-Palestinian slogans being projected onto a screen. And one of them said, Israel is committing genocide against the Palestinian people. Another said, it is being enabled by the U.S. government who arm and fund Israel. They also held up a Palestinian flag. Now, they have never supported Hamas or Hezbollah, and they said they don't incite violence against any individual or any member of the British Parliament, because Again, Northern Ireland is still part of Britain. I still believe it's a temporary arrangement. A temporary arrangement that's been going on about 700 years. But they are still part of Britain, so they are subject to British law and the British courts. And one of the band members, Liam Ogg, he was hit with a terror charge based on that and perhaps other comments relevant to Palestine and Israel and the U.S. And that constitutes as terrorism, to call out a country, Israel, being supported by money from another country, the U.S., for destroying an entire occupied region, not Gaza, and creating famine conditions. I mean, the British should know a lot about creating famine conditions. That's what they did in Ireland back in the 1800s. They should know a lot about attempted genocides. They did a pretty good job of trying to destroy the Irish. I'm not a huge fan of rap music, although that said, you must know this, that I once performed one song with a rap group at a venue here in Des Moines. Nick Strickland's group, Strychnine. I played accordion for actually a song about a young, I can't remember whether he was a Pakistani or Indian, a young boy who was standing up for justice. Little Iqbal, I think the name was. Anyway, I played accordion for that. Total aside, sorry, we'll go back to the main topic here. This gets really interesting because they are very high profile in terms of their promotion of the Irish language. They speak it, they use it in their music, and when Liam Ogg was hit with this terrorism charge and taken to court, he insisted on having the court proceedings interpreted for him in Irish. And so that was interesting because way back when, actually 1737, there was an act of the British Parliament put in place that prohibited the use of Irish in court. That also, of course, went along with the British Empire banning even the use of Irish. You couldn't even speak Irish. And there's a great song I know. Maybe I'll sing it for you all someday. Anyway, it's about Moses, Raitur Laurlae. It's about a Jewish man who opens a shop in, I believe, Dublin, back in like hundreds of years ago. And above the shop, he puts his name in Hebrew. And the British policeman, who was kind of clueless, as all British policemen are in Irish songs, thinks that it's Gaelic. So he has the man arrested. But when Moses goes to court, he finds out that the judge is actually his cousin. And when the judge realizes that the man being brought before him is a cousin of his, he makes sure that the policeman gets demoted. So anyway, you could not speak Irish in your own country under British rule. You could not own land. I mean, my great-grandfather had he was the first one in my family to have an opportunity to buy land. That was back in the 1890s, I believe. And he was only able to buy land because he had come to the U.S. for a while, made some money, went back, was able to buy land that they had lived on, but not as owners, as tenant farmers. So I think it's really neat that a rap group is helping to push forward the importance of reviving the Irish language. Again, the Irish language is not dead, but it's not that well used. There are certain pockets of the country, Gaelic areas, where Irish is spoken and where they receive additional help and incentive from the federal government of Ireland to maintain and expand that that tradition. You also, if you want a job in the government, if you want to be a police officer, for example, or any government position, you've got to pass a basic Irish proficiency test. But that's the extent of it. And it really is exciting to see a band using Gaelic again, elevating its importance, encouraging more and more people to study, revive, learn the language. So Liam gets to the courthouse in London, big place, and there's a huge throng of supporters there, to you know, in his defense. I mean, It used to be that you couldn't speak the Irish language, but now you can speak the Irish language, but you can't defend Palestinian people who are also being treated as bad or worse than the Irish were once treated by the British. So it's ironic. But I'm going to play you a short clip from what he had to say outside the courtroom after the trial.
Thank you, everybody, for coming up. We appreciate it. Obviously, it's great to see the support out here. We know this story is more than just about me. It's more than kneecap. This is a story about Palestine and us as a distraction from the real story. We know, unfortunately, this story will end up in the media today while Israel commits genocide at the same time. So everybody, continue to speak about Palestine. Free Palestine. Thank you all for coming. Chucky Arlan.
Yeah, I guess that can get you in trouble. I mean, it's incredible. So again, kudos to them. Kudos to them for being unafraid to talk about what's important to them. And to speak truth to power. Let's just call it what it is, speaking truth to power. The power of the U.S. government and funding, lots of problems around the world. and again, you know, we fund good stuff too, but a lot of the good stuff we fund has been cut by this current president. And the bad stuff continues. And again, we have to remember that a lot of this whole problem with the displacement of the Palestinian people goes back to a time when Britain controlled that land and basically drew some lines in the sand to create the current boundaries of a lot of the countries in the Middle East. One more thing about kneecap, the name. And maybe people know this, maybe not, but kneecap, the name of the band, refers to this horrible type of punishment that was used back during what are called the Troubles, when the Protestant and Catholic forces in Northern Ireland were just tearing each other apart, late 60s, 70s, early 80s. And I've shared stories with my own experience with some of that. And again, I'll reiterate, I am not a fan of the IRA. I'm certainly not a fan of the Ulster Defense Association either. I think the violence that happened on both sides was reprehensible. And kneecapping was a form of that violence. You know, the paramilitary groups on both sides, the loyalists and the Republicans, in the Irish case, the Republican refers to those who want to see a united Republic of Ireland. But they both use that tactic. They both would, instill fear in their own community, but in the other community as well. They would punish people who did something they didn't like. In some cases, that involved being kneecapped. And recently a story came out. It's a story of a guy named Liam Barker. He was shot in both knees when he was a teenager. It was a paramilitary shooting. And he said it has left him, you know, mentally and physically traumatized his whole life. And of course it would. You know, he says it's, you know, he's 53 now. He was a teenager and he was living in isolation and fear, as a lot of people were back during the Troubles. And he was captured and brought to a house and had his kneecaps blown off, you know, and just, it's horrible. And it's what's happening in Israel in Gaza right now, okay? It's what's happening elsewhere. You know, with IDF soldiers who are making sure that young Palestinians never get the chance to be rebels by, in some cases, being shot in the knees, some cases being shot in the testicles. It's horrible stuff. And I will say again that I'm so sick of violence. The answer to violence is not more of it. And I know there have been efforts to accomplish peace, to get to peace through diplomacy. And it sometimes seems like it doesn't work, but the violence is not working either. And again, I look at Northern Ireland back in the 60s, 70s, early 80s, and you see an escalation. Catholics did one thing, the Protestants responded. The Protestants did something, the Catholics responded. And it just kept spiraling to the point where so many lives were lost, so many kneecaps were damaged, so many buildings destroyed, so many lives shattered. And what grew out of that eventually, and again, I think you could have skipped that chapter and gone straight to what's happened since. And the IRA is basically, unless something's happened that I've missed, is no longer a force. But what grew out of the IRA is a political party, Sinn Féin, which became prominent in Northern Ireland, and now is actually, at last count, the largest political party in the Republic of Ireland. And they've got, I think it's good to have a political system where you've got different parties. I happen to think a lot of what Sinn Féin stands for is very encouraging, very progressive, very economically populist. And it's good to see that development. I don't think you have to go through a violent phase to get to that phase. And I look at all the great leaders throughout our own history and throughout global history who prioritized the nonviolent approach to social change. And I am not so naive as to believe that there are not cases in which the only answer is a military response. I can't think of a single one in my lifetime, though. I can look back a little further to World War II and admit that I do not know how you could have defeated Hitler without some kind of military response. An evil that great, that expansive, that unwilling to provide any sense of recognition of dignity to any human being that was not deemed to be within the chosen class. I don't know how you deal with that. On that level, and maybe I'm just missing something. And I know there were plenty of nonviolent responses to Hitler, and very encouraging actions and acts of nonviolent civil disobedience. But I'm not sure that was ever enough to stop him. But I do think that in most cases, a lot of the evils in this world can be stopped through nonviolent action. And there's a researcher, a writer, a scholar named Erica Chenoweth, who's done a great job of chronicling how much more effective, on balance, nonviolent responses to political chaos, how much more effective they are than violent ones. And Paul Engler and Mark Engler write about this in their book, This is an Uprising, great book. And they write about it very compelling. And I think we're at a time right now in this country where in response to the Trump administration and concerns about where we're heading, we're not going to effectively stop this direction we're going through violence, whether that's name calling or more aggressive forms of violence. We're going to stop it through collective, coordinated, creative nonviolent action. And we've seen a bunch of that. We've seen it in the No Kings rallies and whatnot. And I think that trend needs to continue, needs to grow, needs to focus. And I think this is a real test for that approach to social change. And I think we can do it. Hey, thank you, folks. Again, Ed Fallon with you here. Got to take a short break. When we come back for our farm and food segment today, Kathy's joining me. We're going to kick it off with a conversation about some interesting stuff happening in Indiana and what that might mean for creating greater connections between farmers and those of us who eat for a living. Back in a minute on the Fallon Forum. Eshlum, Nakar Hugum, the dog coach Winchy, Najan, Annalisa, Mokhoj Vinci. Mate loves who, so I wish you could do a version for him, but PG, send me it when you can. He's your number one fan. His first word was called Thurland, so he understands all the tree kagan. He's only started in East Columbia, so he just thinks you guys are lethal. And the way's a wee bit young, trying to keep it from a denizen, but yeehaw. Cool gorgeous, from a new ghost raider, 40 up breast smells like Seder. Try to talk business to me with jizz in your teeth, back at the glitter. Cap, it's fellowship. Look at Enchant's got a chocolate. Architecture by Synthesis provides planning, design, and design build services for high performance, low maintenance, affordable homes and buildings. Owner Mark Clipsham asks that you use the most energy efficient methods you can afford and the greenest, longest-lasting materials available. Examples of Mark's work can be found at architecturebysynthesis.com. That's architecturebysynthesis.com.
At Story County Veterinary Clinic, Dr. Kim Holding has over 30 years of experience working with all creatures, great and small. Cat, dog, horse, cow, elephant. Well, if you've got a pet elephant, you may be in trouble. Kim's clients stick with her year after year because they know she'll do right by them and their pets and farm animals. So give Kim a shout to keep your animals happy and healthy. Call 515-232-8766. That's 232-8766.
Welcome back to the Fallon Forum. Ed Fallon with you here, folks. Hey, thanks to our sponsors, including psychiatrist Dr. David Drake. If you live in Iowa, wherever you live in Iowa, Dr. Drake can help through the convenience and privacy of televideo counseling offered on a self-pay negotiated fee basis. Contact David Drake, familypsychiatry.com. Hey, Kathy, welcome to the program.
Hi.
So you've been nosing about Indiana. Well, not physically. You've been looking up something regarding their FarmWise program, which sounds pretty cool and encouraging.
Yeah, I was excited to see it. You know, we try to keep up on news about local food programs, and I hadn't known till just today that Indiana has a pretty strong statewide support for local food, and it's especially prevalent at Indiana University. The university has an Environmental Resilience Institute. And this new program at the university is called FarmWise Indiana. And it's going to try to, it's connecting operators of Indiana's small and mid-sized farms and food producers with institutional buyers. This is cool because here at Birds and Bees Urban Farm, we are not, you know, connecting small producers with buyers, but we do know the people in town who are doing that. And we were part of a food security task force that has had its ups and downs in the city government. And that was a big part of what we had hoped to see being accomplished just in Des Moines. But this is a statewide program.
Yeah. And so is it helping to increase the number of farmers who are actually producing food for local consumption?
Well, the program is just now being initiated.
Okay.
So they're going to try to connect operators of the farms and the food producers with institutional buyers. So that means schools, universities, restaurants, retail outlets, healthcare providers.
Mm-hmm.
I recently saw a friend who has had to spend some time in a hospital, and she posted on Facebook that she was surprised that they could find her such good food. Hospitals aren't necessarily known for having good food. That's hard to meet everybody's taste. But
yeah.
So that would be one of the healthcare providers that the folks in this program are working to connect farmers with.
Well, that's pretty cool. And this is a state initiative?
Yeah. Here's a quote from the founder, Jody Smith. FarmWise Indiana is about building relationships that benefit everyone, from farmers and food producers to the communities they nourish. We're focused on making local food a bigger part of Indiana's economy and identity. That's the end of the quote.
Yeah, take that, Iowa.
I love that.
We can't get that? I mean, you know, I worked on something along those lines when I was a state lawmaker, and it was never taken seriously by the Republican majority. Or honestly, even by a lot of the Democrats in the minority. So it's nice to see it moving forward in Indiana.
Well, here in Des Moines, we've already proposed to the city that the city create itself as and declare itself as the local food capital of the U.S.
I would say Des Moines is also ahead of the curve in so many ways. I mean, for example, you can have chickens in Des Moines. A lot of towns don't allow chickens.
Mm-hmm.
You can have up to 30, in fact, which is a decent flock. You can raise rabbits and bees in the city without a problem.
Which we do.
You can even have a couple pygmy goats or a couple potbelly pigs. Those are more, I think, for pets. But, you know, That's a start. You can also grow food in your front yard.
Yes, now you can.
Also grow.
Thank you, Mary Farrell.
Yeah, you can also. No, that's the parking strip.
The parking. Oh, I'm sorry.
The front yards have been. But there are cities where you aren't allowed to grow it in your front yard.
That's right. And Urbandale, for instance.
Yeah. You can grow it on the parking strip. So there's in a lot of ways, it's pretty progressive already, but it's got a long ways to go. But this is cool. An entire state that's really moving. I mean, I'd be interested to see how well it pans out, but it's a really great start.
It is. And one benefit that they're citing, besides just people getting to eat better food and places that want to serve that food, being able to find that food, is that local economies where small and mid-sized farmers can do well, they can contribute more back to their community. Mm-hmm. So you're creating jobs, you're creating food security, and there's some good data that is, you know, you can say local foods is where it's at because, for instance, more than 50% of Indiana food service buyers surveyed in the setup to this project defined local as being grown or made in Indiana, which isn't hyper-local at all, but yeah. It's statewide. Those 200 buyers are spending more than $550 million purchasing food each year. Substituting food grown and made in that same state can boost their food economy. So, right. You know, not...
At some point, they may be bumping up against the interests of corporate ag.
Mm-hmm. And, you know? And the grocers.
Sure, and the groceries, yeah, and maybe even foreign markets that want. I mean, Iowa, what, 85% of our food comes from outside of the state,
and we're the food basket.
We're the ethanol.
Iowa feeds the world.
We're the corn for ethanol and
cattle feed
capital of the world.
Well, another stat per USDA. Sales from farmers to wholesale buyers increased 280% from 2017 to 2020, totaling more than $305 million. Now, I'm going to predict that will go down in the years to come if these cuts from the current U.S. administration to farm-to-table programs continue.
Yeah, we're already seeing those programs being hurt here in Iowa.
Well, the interesting part of this initiative in Indiana, I think, is the funding. It's a group called Builders Initiative. It was actually founded by Lucas Walton, his grandson, and one of the heirs to the Walmart fortune.
Wow.
Sam and the founder of Walmart, Sam Walton, but. I didn't do a deep dive into Builders Initiative, but they do seem to have a pretty big philanthropic arm.
And, not surprising.
And also they have expressed support for critical race theory influence concept of food equity and equity in general.
Oh, that's going to get them canceled.
The quote from them, inclusiveness and equity are key to vibrant, thriving communities. So it sounds like they're doing what they can to give back. So we're just thrilled to see any local food initiative. We do want to mention again that we're close to having a date for the planting of the urban orchard in Des Moines that we proposed to the city a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. That will be sometime this fall, maybe within weeks,
we're looking
don't know,
at, 40,
at Drake Park. In
40 fruit trees?
I think it's about 35 now with the space, but there will be some existing trees that will be maintained. Yeah. So that'll be happening. It may be scheduled when we can have volunteers come and help.
Yeah.
And also, we have a harvest party coming up, our fifth annual harvest party.
And harvest party is interesting.
This
because,
is at Birds and Bees Urban Farm.
Yeah, because we... At a place like ours where we grow food, we harvest every season, every month. Every month, even January, we're harvesting something.
We're harvesting, yeah.
So, and it's going to be September 13th.
September 13th. Yeah. And it was originally scheduled from 2 to 4. We're going to extend that to 2 to 5 because of popular demand.
What do we got going on?
We've got... beautiful string music by Anna and Elena Steenson. They play Irish music with you, Ed.
And classical. Yeah.
We have a guest chef, Albin Blot, and he is a French guy who lives in our neighborhood. He's going to make a special dish with rabbit. And we're just going to have a lot of fun. We usually get about 100 people come through. We have sponsors, Gateway Market, and Lua Brewing.
Kathy, thanks for joining me today. And thanks to our production team of Sherry Herdina, Forrest Detterman, Charles Goldman, Kathy Burns, and myself, Ed Fallon. Thanks also to our local small business partners, Gateway Marketing Cafe, Story County Veterinary Clinic, Westrum Optometry, David Drake Family Psychiatry, real estate agent Joe Henry, and Architecture by Synthesis. Thanks to our nonprofit partners as well, Catholic Peace Ministry, Iowa Physicians for Social Responsibility, Bold Iowa, Birds and Bees Urban Farm, and Climate March. Finally, thanks to the Des Moines Irish Session for our bumper music. Back next week, folks, with another hour of cutting-edge talk radio.